Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning. My name is John Baker, and welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. My cohort, Stone Payton, is out and about, probably doing another networking event or show on the road. So today we are running with two individuals that we're going to have a good discussion with, Jim Garrett and David Topas. And Jim's going to be the first guest on, and Jim is actually the president, CEO and founder of Snapfinger, and we chatted a little bit before we got on air, Jim, about your business. Kind of cool. You get to go get food anywhere you are, pretty much in the, is it continental U.S. or anywhere in the world?
Actually includes Canada as well.
So our northern brethren, yeah, they can actually get food from you as well.
That's right.
Maybe you could give us a little bit of background on yourself and how Snapfinger got started.
Well, really the way we got started, my background was more in the internet banking industry. So I was one of the pioneers of online banking. So if you now do your banking online instead of send a check in the mail, you can thank me and my gang that helped start that.
Wow, you're famous.
That's right. Well, not really.
Not
just,
really.
Just among my kids.
It's like starting the internet, right?
Right. Me and Al Gore.
Yeah, you and Al.
But how it really got started is I'm friends with the president of Coca-Cola, and we were discussing one day how big and sort of underserved the restaurant industry is when it comes to technology. And one of the things that he clued me in on is the restaurant industry is a $500 billion industry, and $140 billion of that, believe it or not, is for takeout food.
Wow.
Because families are just busy now and do a lot more takeout.
Yeah.
And the way it's been done, you know, in the past is you pick up the phone, you call, and you get a part-time employee who puts you on hold, and you know, there it goes downhill from there. So
yeah.
So what we did was we created a self-service application that you can order from, you know, tens of thousands of restaurants, either online through the website or from a mobile device. And restaurants love it because it drives a lot more business to them, and consumers like it because it's more relevant to their lifestyles now, because people are very mobile and gives them the ability to basically have direct access to restaurants from their mobile device, from an iPad, from a computer, whatever. So we just recently added all restaurants to it. So it's also a search and discovery site as well. So we have 570,000 restaurants listed on the site. And some portion of those you can actually, you know, place an order with. And a lot of major chains. So we're the exclusive provider, say, to Outback and California Pizza Kitchen and Boston Market and Subway and people like that.
Well, that's awesome. So these are independent groups that come on with you. Is basically you're almost a window into their business, and you're going to drive clients to them. So of course, why wouldn't they want to be involved with it, right?
That's exactly right. It's just like in the real estate business. You know, restaurants want the They tell you that three most important things in the restaurant business, location, location, location. So if you have a chance to be in everybody's hip pocket,
yeah,
then you probably should do that.
So how have you? Who's your clientele? I mean, is it mainly mom staying at home trying to find dinner for the kids, or is it the traveling guy like David, who we're going to talk to here in a second, who's on a plane left and right, traveling all over the world, and just needs, you know, a good way of finding good food?
Well, it's actually all the above. So our demographics span everything from high school and college kids to single adults to moms to dads that are busy. The bottom line is, you know, our lifestyles have really changed dramatically over the past 15 or 20 years, and you have both parents working, you have people with busy schedules, and so a lot of times, you know, the fact of the matter is most people eat three times a day, and a lot of times they're just rushed, and a ready-prepared meal is more ideal than sort of the way the Waltons did it.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, there's $140 billion a year. It represents 10 billion transactions per year are for takeout. So it's an enormous industry, an enormous piece of business.
So if I was to sign onto your site right now and look for something to eat, what kind of search mechanisms are in there? How can you find out like what it is what's available?
Yeah, well, the basic premise behind everything is based on convenience. So it's going to basically, if you have a mobile device and you have the Snapfinger app, which by the way is one of the top 10 apps in the App Store. It will know your location based on your geo proximity.
Oh, okay.
And then based on that, it will show you the restaurants around you. And then it will indicate which ones you can place an order from or make a reservation or call ahead seating or whatever you might want to do. But the predominant reason people use it is to order takeout.
To order takeout into the house, mainly.
Yeah, or delivery. I mean, a lot of restaurants deliver as well. So if you're on a website, then you can put in your location, your zip code, your street, and the same thing. It'll pull up the restaurants that are close by.
All right. So someone needs to grab a bite to eat. They're in their car, or hopefully not texting while they're in their car.
That's
but
right.
They're looking for something to eat. They know they're on the way home. Bam, they can do it on their cell phone. They can order it, go pick it up on the way home. Or if they're home at a computer and they're trying to order a pizza or some Chinese or whatever. You know, something happens to me all the time. I was telling you earlier. I got four kids, you know, married, white picket fence, you know, living in Roswell. But always we get into this discussion of what are we going to eat?
Right.
You know, and I say, what am I going to eat? I don't know. What do you feel like, Chinese? Or you feel pizza again? I don't like pizza again. You know, and sometimes you need something that kind of give you some ideas. Would this help with that at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of it is convenience. The second thing is variety. So the nice thing about the Snapfinger site is it gives you all restaurants, and you can even filter it based on categories like variety. So if you wanted Indian food, Thai food, or pizza, or Chinese, or whatever, you can filter it by that as well. So it gives you variety, access, convenience. You know, it's just sort of a good tool to use for, you know, families like yours.
Yeah. So who are you trying to get this out to? I mean, obviously it's the public. It's the general public. What have you done that's been successful in getting the word out for other, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners and executives? What works?
Well, for one thing, we're very fortunate, and we developed some very sophisticated technology that actually gives us direct access to the restaurant's point of sale system. So, for example, a lot of big chains like Outback and Boston Market, their restaurant menu is different for every location and, quite frankly, changes dynamically during the day. They run out of items. They offer different specials. So our interactive menus are updated in real time based on what's actually going on in that store as far as prep times, things like that. So one of the things we do is we really leverage our relationship with big major brands, number one. So they promote us a lot. The second thing we do, we have a relationship with Coca-Cola, so they do a lot of promotion for us as well. But then we do a lot of advertising ourselves to get people to download our Android app, our iPhone app, things such as that. But a lot of what we do is really internet related, search related. So if you go online, you start searching for, you know, a restaurant or a certain kind of food, we're going to pop up.
Yeah. So making money, right? The internet, how do you make money? Really advertising, right? So is the other side of the coin going out and finding people that want to advertise on your site? Where does the revenue come from?
Yeah, great question. No, in fact, we don't do any advertising or allow any revenue from that. Our application is completely free to the consumer. The restaurants actually pay us a transaction fee.
Oh,
so
okay.
Similar to a credit card fee.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
We're bringing a business and you can pay online as well. So it's a transaction fee that's paid to us by the restaurant.
Great. So you go and you order a burger from Ray's or whatever, and they've got it ready to go for you, and automatically you get dinged with a whatever percent, and they just pay you on that?
All right. The restaurant pays us. Yeah, it's free to the customer.
Now, are you a closely held corporation? Are you an IPO yet? How do I buy that stock?
No, it's funny. We, in fact, just recently we've got VCs sort of throwing money at us, so we're about to close on a $25 million round. We have raised about $15 million, you know, year to date, but we got a lot of interest from concepts like Groupon and Google, who we partner with on a lot of things. So,
yep.
Frankly, getting venture money right now is pretty easy. They have a lot of money sitting on the sideline earning 1%
trying to burn a hole in their pocket.
That's right.
They want 25. That one's not going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And so they like to, they like to invest a lot too. So most of them don't want to invest a little because it's the same amount of work for them whether they invest right. $5 million or $20 million.
Yeah, and if you're raising money from the venture capital groups, are you seeing activity from individuals as well? Are they doing individual private placements with you, or is it mainly just through venture capital?
Well, up to this point, we did do a lot of individuals. So I have a pretty long following of high net worth people, so who've done deals with me in the past. So we raised about $10 million just from individuals. And then we brought in Norwest Venture Capital last spring.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first venture capital firm we brought in. And now we're considering another one. And it's not really as much for the money as it is for the value that they bring strategically in terms of relationships and potential exit strategies or IPO. So our business model is very, very similar to Open Table. So, for example, Open Table obviously provides reservations. Their total market opportunity in the U.S. is 25,000 restaurants. That's how many restaurants take reservations. They have a $2 billion market cap right now. They went public a year and a half ago. Our opportunity is 10 times that size. So there's 550,000 restaurants that do takeout. So the opportunity for us to do, you know, potentially an IPO similar to Open Table is looks pretty good at this point.
That's good stuff. All right, so let's go back to the beginning. This little idea was just kind of a germination between, hey, these restaurants are a huge business, and there's really nothing in that space, right?
Right.
How did you decide to make the change? I mean, obviously, you've got the internet experience, you've got the technology experience. How did you decide to make that change from the executive position into something that's more entrepreneurial?
You mean for me personally?
Yeah, for you personally.
So my background includes, working with, I was president of John Harlan. I was, executive vice president of Check Free for a while. So I've done the corporate thing and, I really didn't enjoy it. It's too much bureaucracy, moves too slow. It's hard to get a whole lot done.
Yeah.
And I'm really an entrepreneur at heart. So to me, I would rather sort of do something on my own and start it up than that. So I've started up a couple of different concepts and I just get more enjoyment out of it. It's higher risk, higher reward, but I'm kind of a risk taker. So.
You kind of like that gig, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So the other things that you – it sounds like this one's kind of down the road a bit. I mean, when did you start this concept with Snapfinger?
Well, we started in late 2004.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the first 3 years, you've heard the old adage, the pioneers get the arrows in the back and the settlers get the land. Well, first 3 years, it was definitely a struggle.
Yeah.
I would say there were at least two or three times I considered, packing it in. And I actually was offered another corporate job, you know, making a lot of money at the time, it looked like a really good idea.
Yeah, but you almost jumped ship.
Yeah. So, but we decided to stick it out and stayed, you know, core to what we were trying to do, and we were pretty much ahead of the market. And you know, it the markets move much slower in terms of consumer adoption than you might think. You know, whether it was kiosk at the airport or pay at the pump or ATMs or credit cards, if you really go back and analyze the history of those things, you know, most of them took 7 to 10 years to really catch on. I mean, you know, just look at mobile phones. I mean, you know, today smartphones, you know, make up 90% of the market. But, you know, smartphones have been around for a long time. People have really been quite slow, you know, adopting that as a general marketplace. So we were pretty much ahead of the restaurant industry, the consumers. And so it took a while for people to catch up. And quite frankly, I think the downturn in the economy was the best thing that ever happened to us.
Really?
Absolutely, because the restaurant business lost 23% of all restaurants went away last year.
Yeah, I definitely saw a lot of doors shutting.
And what happens is all those marginal restaurants that are barely hanging on anyway because they got either a bad concept, bad food, or a bad location, they went away in a hurry.
Yeah.
but the rest of them sort of sat around a table and said, okay, so we can take it in the shorts and plan on 20% less revenues, or we can figure out something to do. Yeah. And so we had a solution that really extended their brand out to a set of consumers that really have an affinity towards, you know, accessibility, whether it's and takeout as well. So
are there any areas that you're not covering in the United States? I mean, if somebody's going to fly to kind of an area that you just haven't gone to yet, is there anywhere that's not picked up yet?
Well, the way we started, it was sort of like building a shopping mall. So we started with anchor tenants. So we didn't even call on individual restaurants until about a year and a half ago. So we strictly focused on national chains.
Yep.
So the good part about that is it gave us a big footprint.
Yep.
So pretty much, you know, like, for example, Outback has 859 locations, Baja Fresh and Boston Market and CPK. I mean, they're in a lot of areas. So that gave us a big footprint, as well as Subway. So so that was the start. And then now what we do is pretty much in the top NFL markets, you know, we're going out calling on individual restaurants as well. And through a relationship that we have with Coca-Cola Company and Sysco Foods, we get a lot of independents. So you may find a few places, you know, in Missoula, Montana, that where we may not have, you know, some restaurants. But for the most part, you know, we cover a pretty broad spectrum of the U.S. Like I said earlier, we're in about, I don't know, more than 2,500 cities across the U.S.
You mentioned Boston Market and Subway.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't even have been on my list because
right.
How lazy can you be not to order at the window and get Boston Market takes 2 minutes.
Right.
Or Subway. I mean, you know, do you want mayonnaise or mustard on the sub?
Right.
He's right there, right?
Right.
You get a lot of business from those kind of almost fast food type chains?
Well, it's interesting you would ask that. So when we started the business, you know, our focus was really on casual dining concepts like Outback, where things take 20-30 minutes to prepare.
Well, that makes total sense.
Where it made more sense.
Yep.
But it's really been interesting in the past year and a half. We've had so much more interest from even quick service concepts like McDonald's, Burger King, Subway. The reason is this. First of all, those concepts, 70% of their total business is takeout, number one.
Yeah,
number
wow.
two, most of that is done through the drive-thru
in
many cases.
Yep.
All right? So their biggest problem with the drive-thru is they have limited capacity. So there's a bottleneck there. Most of those concepts, just like Starbucks, Subways, they do 80% of their business in a two-hour window. So if you think about it, what they have is a throughput capacity.
Yeah.
So, for example, Subway knows across the board, they have over 24,000 restaurants in the U.S. Here's what they know. They do 80% of their business in a two-hour window. When there's more than 10 people in line, two out of the next five walk off.
Yeah.
So they have a throughput problem.
Yep.
So for a lot of takeout customers, the ability to pre-order online, pay for it, and everything else, if you think about it, when you go, say, to a Subway, you probably spend 30, 45 seconds, maybe even a minute to a minute and a half, repeating several times what you want and what you don't want on your sandwich.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even once you tell them, they look back up, they ask you again. So it's a way to really increase their throughput. So our customers have seen about a 25% to 30% increase in their takeout business by using this platform.
And I totally get that on the company side, but the consumer side's actually going online and ordering this stuff for takeout. You're seeing that as a operation.
Absolutely. Well, one of the nice parts about it, and once you use the app, you'll see it saves your favorites. So when you go through and you know, if you think about it, most of us, when we think of a brand, a restaurant that we go to, California Pizza Kitchen, you know, you think of your one or two items that you typically order.
Yeah.
Well, since it saves your favorites and it's right there on your, you know, your desktop or on your application, you can order, pay, and be done in less than 20 seconds. So it's a very convenient way, you know, for a lot of people, and so it has a pretty good appeal. I mean, we have over 4 million users, and you know, this year we'll process about $400 million in takeout business.
Wow, that's great stuff. So, last question on the business because we're running a little bit short on time. Yeah. So, I'm curious, what is your top couple of organizations that are being used, like is it an Outback? Is it a Boston Market? Who's up there at the top?
Well, I would say Outback is probably Outback and California Pizza Kitchen are two big ones. Believe it or not, there's a concept in the Midwest called Bob Evans and Mimi's.
Oh yeah, sure. Mimi's is here.
Yeah,
they got Mimi's one down in Perimeter.
Right, right.
Great food. Really,
we do a ton of business with all them. And we're about to sign on Cheesecake Factory, so we expect that.
Nice.
Now we also handle call center application as well. So if you call a California Pizza Kitchen, you're talking to our call center partner. We're not in the call center business, but they use our application remotely to place your order for you. So we process 100% of all their takeout business.
Brilliant. So. Brilliant. Are they calling in the United States, or is that an offshore call?
No, it's here.
So you're employing people here in the good old US of A.
That's right. They're all in Colorado Springs.
Jim, you are just killing it. That's great. All right. Yeah. Well, that is really a neat concept.
Thanks.
It sounds like things are rolling for you. I ask all my guests this, and I'm gonna specify it because I think you've got a really neat experience of transitioning from the corporate environment, which I've seen a lot of people come through the corporate environment and going through it right now in my business. And they're all thinking about these entrepreneurial ideas and maybe corporate America isn't really where I want to be. What pearl of wisdom would you give to those people that are thinking about making that jump?
Well, that's a great question. You know, it's funny. I have three adult children now that have all graduated from college, and one of the things I'm most proud of is I really taught all of them. It's in their DNA that regardless of what you think you want to do, I want you to be prepared at any point to be able to go start your own business and have an understanding of how you have to go about doing that. So the biggest caution I would have is just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. And what I mean by that, more often than not, I see people come up with solutions, technology, applications, ideas that are real interesting, but they really don't solve a problem or an application that has, you know, any significant merit. And so that's the biggest thing, is people do things because they think it's a good idea, or they see a interesting retail location that's empty and they think, well, you know, gosh, I ought to start a coffee shop, which is a really bad idea.
there's not too many of those around.
Right. I mean, when you really sit down and start doing the math and think about, you know, how many cups of coffee do I got to sell just to pay the rent, you know, it turns into a difficult business model. So I think just a good dose of reality and get advice from people in the business. And most importantly, listen to the advice. So a lot of people you know, will get advice but then ignore it because they're really passionate about doing this thing.
They think their passion will take them through anything.
Right. And I think the other thing that I would recommend is position yourself to go through some very difficult times, financially, mentally. It's lonely. It's a struggle. Very few Googles out there that just sort of make it overnight. And most of them take a while.
Yeah.
So
you got to have good idea, listen to advice, and be prepared.
Be prepared
for some not so fun times.
Right, and I think if your DNA is not one where you're fairly tenacious person, where you have a stick with it attitude, regardless, then I would say you're probably not ideally suited to go do this.
Well, speaking of tenacious, and we're going to get into David Topas here in a second because he's got some really cool stories. But before we leave, if somebody wants to log on, try out the site, or get in communication with you somehow, what's the best way to do that? What's the website or email?
Well, the website is snapfinger.com, or the mobile application is also Snapfinger. You can find that if you have an iPhone or an Android.
So those BlackBerry guys are out of luck, huh?
No, actually, our BlackBerry app will be out in about 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay, good. Yeah. So those business guys.
We kept thinking those were going to go under, but it looks like they're going to stay around a while. So anyway, that's our website, and it has a place on there for contact, so to contact us. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's great. That's good stuff. Can you hang around a bit?
Yeah, sure. David, love to. I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, So David Topas is owns a business, and he kind of runs an organization that helps people with non-traditional networking, right? So this is I've seen David speak a couple times and has some really great stories. David, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and kind of where you came from.
Well, sure, John. Helping people network and expand their world by expanding their contact base is certainly one of the things I do. It all kind of falls under the heading of turning reputation into revenue. And that's how I think about what I do. I do that in a variety of contexts, but certainly in this realm of what I call random networking or random everyday networking.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about this random networking.
Well, you know, over the years, from a personal standpoint, I have billed and generated hundreds of thousands of dollars in consulting and training fees, simply based upon the people that I've met in random, everyday encounters. In fact, so successful was I at this that I actually began intentionally putting myself into places and situations where I would be able to meet influential people. And so for many years, I would fly to I would take airline trips with no particular destination, but simply for the purpose of making contacts up in that first class cabin.
So you just fly around the United States and try and connect with people.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, and it didn't really matter where I was going. It just mattered that I was going somewhere in an airplane at 37,000 feet with a lot of influential people. So for me, this was really no big deal because it's kind of what I did.
Yeah, it's kind of natural tendencies.
It was, and it worked, so I kept doing it. And my friends and colleagues said, "Dave, that's really something unique and, you know, really unusual. You really need to tell that story." So I called over to Joe Sharkey, who writes a column on the road in the New York Times every Tuesday, and I left him a voicemail. I said, "Hey, Joe, David Topas, we don't know each other, but I do this thing that my friends think is really unusual. I fly to no particular destination, but just for the purpose of meeting people while I'm on the plane. And over the years, I've billed hundreds of thousands of dollars in fees from the people I've met." And about an hour later, he called me back, and he said, "You do what?"
An hour later, he calls you back.
He said, "You got a few hours this afternoon?" I said, "Sure." So the next thing I knew, a week later, there was a story in the New York Times, and that really triggered this whole area. But the fact of the matter is that online networking and social media has changed the landscape of how people network. And, you know, who you know has always been and always will be central to your success. So it's a matter of getting to know people and getting to know people who can help you and having meaningful connections. And, you know, social media is great, but there are limitations. I almost sometimes think of it as anti-social media, because Facebook has really redefined the word friend, and LinkedIn has really redefined the notion of a connection. And so here we find ourselves looking online and using online tools in order to build our pipeline, build our connections. And yet it really can leave a lot to be desired. People are seeking human connection, and there'll always need to be some kind of face-to-face human contact in order to leverage those connections. It's not about how many connections you have. It's about how many connections you have that you can monetize.
Are you on LinkedIn?
Oh, yeah.
Facebook?
Absolutely.
Okay, so help us understand how you leverage that to find these and create these meaningful relationships.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I think there's a limitation to what you can do through a Facebook friend or through a LinkedIn connection. No doubt, the more people that you know about increases the chances of being able to leverage a connection. But again, I know people who have 500 connections, and I say, so what? You know, just because you know somebody who knows somebody who's willing to connect with you on LinkedIn doesn't mean that person is going to be available to help you, willing to help you, or has the resources and influence and authority to help you. So it's a starting point, but it's not the whole story.
So tell us a little bit more about this activity that you do, the social net. What do you need to be able to be good at? People are terrified of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they think someone's going to walk up and think you're an axe murderer or something. What are you doing talking
to me? Yeah, there is a little bit of that creep factor aware of.
Leave me alone. I'm eating my sandwich.
Yeah. Well, there are four beliefs that a successful everyday random networker really has to have in order to do this effectively. And the first thing you have to believe is that the world's a friendly place. You know, if you leave your house in the morning believing that the world is not a friendly place, you're not going to be successful at reaching out and meeting new people. So you've got to believe in your bones that the world is, in fact, a friendly place. The second thing you have to believe is that pretty much everyone you encounter in a typical day, or really in any venue, can be met. You've got to believe that they are meetable, because if you don't believe they're meetable, you're not going to have the confidence to reach out and make that connection with them. So you've got to believe that they can be met. And I would say that anybody who's in a public place is fair game, because they're in a public place. You know.
So you can approach them. If they're in a public place, it's game on.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, people who go to Starbucks are out in a public arena. And most people, in fact, are starved for that personal connection, because they spent the other 16 hours of the day staring at a computer screen.
Yeah.
So people want to make that in-person connection. And unfortunately, because we spend so much of our time on the computer thinking that we're making great connections, we miss the opportunity, and we lose the skills around face-to-face, in-person communication. So
I would imagine, I don't mean to interrupt, but I would imagine number one is just critical to number two. Because if you have a feeling that you're you know, that someone's going to bite your head off, or feel overcome or overwhelmed or something, if you're just approaching them in a random situation, it's got to be all about skill, right? I mean, you've got to be good at making that. You can't just go up and go, "Hi, I'm John Baker, and I'd like to meet you, and you know, let me sit down with you while you're having your sandwich, or whatever."
Well, along with the first two beliefs of successful everyday random networkers, of believing the world's a friendly place, believing you can pretty much meet anybody, is that you have to believe that the people you meet have value in some way. Everybody you meet can bring value in some context. And then finally, you have to believe that you also bring value.
Right.
So you've got to have those four beliefs in place. Once you have that understanding, then it becomes a matter of skill. And that's simply a matter of you know, putting yourself into certain venues where you'll be exposed to influential people. And secondly, approaching people in a way that creates comfort and trust, and, you know, gets them to want to engage in some kind of conversation.
So, all right, so let's go into an example. You're sitting on a plane, right? Yeah. And there's some and Jim is sitting there next to you.
Yeah.
And he's got a nice watch on, and he's got a, you know, he's looking like a guy that, hey, I might want to meet this guy. What how do you start up a conversation with
him? Well, if I saw Jim on a plane, I'd probably want to order room service or order some food, you know.
That's right.
Not
hey,
room service.
Snap
but,
finger, yeah. Room service would not be
not
the
on the airplane, but I'd probably want to order something from the galley. But anyway, yeah, well, there are certain it depends on the moment, you know, but there's one great avenue of conversation that is pretty much idiot proof. And
it's
that
a lock.
Is, it, well, it's an opening line.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you like your BlackBerry? How do you like your iPhone? How do you like your ThinkPad? How do you like the earbuds that you're using?
Yeah.
You know, almost everybody out there is engaged with some kind of technology at any given time. So by asking it, because everybody has an opinion about their BlackBerry, their iPod, their iPad, their you know, whatever else
they're
doing.
Their new technology, their new toy, right?
And it's a great way to broach a conversation.
Yeah.
And once they tell you, oh, I really like it a lot, or I don't like it, then, of course, you pursue that conversation. What do you like about it?
Yeah.
Well, I really like the way it... So what kind of work do you do on it, if it's a laptop, let's say? What kind of work do? Spreadsheets or Word? You do a lot of spreadsheets. So what line of work are you in? And boom, now you're into the conversation.
Right.
You've established rapport. You've broached the conversation, and you have an idea as to what this person is all about, and then you're on your way.
Now, do you have kids?
Do I have kids?
You have kids?
Yeah, I have grown stepkids.
Boys.
Combination.
Have you trained those boys on this process?
Well, you can't help but think that some of this would rub off.
Is this something that you figured out later, or did you figure this out a little bit in the pursuing days?
Yeah. Well, I think I was always good at sort of chatting people up.
Okay.
And I love meeting new people. I find people fascinating. I'm a very curious person.
Yeah.
Those being important elements of random everyday networking.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I first started out, I would go to industry luncheons where they would have a buffet. And you'd end up in line, putting food on your plate. And when I was young and really a newbie at this kind of thing, it would take me pretty much till we got to the dessert before I could figure out, who this person in front of me was and what they were all about and sort of strike up the rapport and the communication. But as time went on and I got better at this, I would be able to do it, sort of by the time we got to the entree. And when I got really good at it, by the time we're very first few minutes putting salad on the plate, I could pretty much figure out if this is somebody I wanted to know and somebody that would be a worthwhile connection to have. So
you've obviously developed and kind of honed these skills.
Yeah, I believe I have.
If somebody was listening to this and saying, oh, man, that sounds great. That would be amazing for me to do. I mean, besides contacting you and having you help them figure out how to do it, what are some helpful tips on things that they can do to train, to practice, to get better at it?
Yeah. Well, of course, keeping in mind the four beliefs of successful everyday random networking,
yep.
And believing the world's friendly and that you can pretty much meet everybody, and if somebody's out in a public place, they're fair game, and that they have value and you also have value. Once you do that, it's a matter of putting yourself in new and different places. It's much about getting out of your comfort zone. You can meet people anywhere. From the minute you walk out your door in the morning, the world is a big networking opportunity. And, if you're standing on the sidelines of the soccer field watching your kids play soccer, there's somebody standing nearby who might be a really interesting person to know.
Right.
And, if you're sitting, if you're at a wedding and you're sitting at a table with 8 or 9 other people, there's somebody there who is probably worth getting to know. And, I've met people in doctor's offices. I've met people on elevators. I've met people on, car rental trams. Just you name it.
I've met anywhere and everywhere.
Anywhere and everywhere.
All right. So give me the best success story you've had. I mean, you must have obviously been doing this for years and years and years. Give me a nice juicy example.
Well, a number of years ago, I got on an airplane and went to sit down and discovered that somebody was in my seat. We had a duplicate seat assignment.
Perfect.
Yeah. And, when somebody's in the seat and you think that's your seat, that could go a couple different ways, And so I made a point of turning what could have been an incendiary situation into a conciliatory situation. And as it turned out, we got our respective seat assignments, and we ended up sitting next to each other. So this individual, I spent about 3 hours on the plane chatting about this and that and that and this, and I was starting up a new product, launching a product in my company, and long story short, 3 months later, this person who, you know, could have created a lot of conflict ended up investing $100,000 in my business. He became an investor in my company.
So just out of meeting him randomly on
just
a plane?
Just a random meeting on an airplane. You know, and I've had a number of those. Not too long ago, I sat next to somebody who was looking for a keynote speaker at a national conference that he was heading up, and he liked what I had to say and what I was all about. And, you know, 3 months later, I was standing in front of, you know, 100 people delivering a keynote. So, you know, lots of stories like this. And I've met people who have just enriched my life, too. I mean, it's not just about monetizing a connection. You can meet people who can teach you things. I've learned a lot just from talking to people. I always end the interaction with, you know, it was a really great pleasure meeting. I've learned a lot. I always come away learning a lot.
So tell me a little bit about your business. We haven't talked much about that. Who is somebody that maybe, you know, a client of yours or somebody that kind of business that you might be looking to get involved with?
Well, I work with individuals in helping them turn their reputations into revenue by helping them understand what is their unique value proposition and helping them articulate that effectively for any purpose, whether it's to advance their business, to advance their career. I work with companies and sales teams in effective messaging, helping them turn their reputation and their company's reputations into revenue through effective articulation of the value proposition. And I'm beginning to work with companies in helping them leverage the talent in their organizations for the sake of competitive advantage and achieving organizational engagement.
So
all of these things tie with reputations and revenue.
And so somebody listening to this would be, you know, an individual that would benefit from meeting and being introduced to new individuals. You would help to coach them and train them on this process.
Yeah, and I can deliver training in this topic about how you can expand your world by expanding your network, by going beyond online connections and turning the everyday random interactions into a world of opportunity.
Why do you think that this is such an uncomfortable thing for people to do? Because it is.
Yeah, for many people. Well, I think that people think that other people don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
And I think that people don't think that what they have to offer is all that worthwhile. So a lot of this has to do with your mindset, and it has to do with how you think about yourself and how you think about yourself in relation to the world around you. And again, if you don't believe that people are available, and if you don't believe that you have value to offer others, you're not going to be good at this. So it all starts with your mindset.
And how would somebody, I mean, obviously those four areas in terms of changing that, it almost seems like people are, you know, I don't want to be bothered, so that guy's not going to want to be bothered. I'm not going to go talk to him because I certainly wouldn't want someone to come talk to me.
Yeah. Well, there are people who don't want to be bothered. I mean, you know, when somebody's sitting on a plane and they've got the eye shades, they've got a blanket over their head and earphones in their ears, chances are they are in that small group that is not available. But when somebody's walking or sitting in a Starbucks with their company logo on their golf shirt, or sitting somewhere with a carry bag that has their company logo on it, or if someone is, you know, standing around on a cell phone having a conversation that you can pretty much hear, there's an implication that they're available.
Right.
And those things also give you opening lines. Oh, do you work for that? You know, do you work for those guys? Oh, yeah. Oh, really? What do you do for them? Oh, great. Cool. Where are you based? Oh, no kidding. That's a great place. You know, you're in a conversation. So people give out clues and cues as to how, you know, how to approach them.
What is the longest trip you took, the longest flight you took, simply to network or to meet people?
Yeah. Well, I once went from Atlanta to L.A. through New York, Boston, Minneapolis, Denver, and Salt Lake City. It was what you might consider a circuitous route.
Yeah.
I think I came back with a half a dozen business cards.
Yeah, and you came back with about 600,000 miles as well.
That as well.
Yeah. You're always obviously flying first class. That's where you want to be, right?
Well, a big part of this is making sure I do get up in first class. And so a big part of this for me is, making sure I maintain my platinum status on Delta.
Right.
So if I were to take a trip someplace just for the miles, anybody who knows what I do would understand why.
Didn't you say there was somebody who actually recognized you one time on a flight? He knew, or you were talking to him and you knew who you were?
Yeah, I was on a plane once standing in the back of the aircraft by the galley just stretching the legs and started chatting with a guy who was based in Atlanta, and I had just had that New York Times piece appear, and I was talking to him, talking to him about what he does, because you always want to talk about what the other party does, and you really want to focus on them. People like to talk about themselves. Many people do, at least. But then I mentioned that I had, because I think he asked me what I do, and I said, one of the things I do is I meet people in everyday random ways. And I said, actually, I was just written up in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for doing this. And he looked at me and he said, that was you? I read that story. I said, yeah, that was me. You're talking to him.
That's right. So you get your 15 minutes of fame right out of the gates.
I guess
that's great. Well, David, that's great stories and sage advice. As I end all these sessions, if you had a pearl of wisdom to offer out to executives and business owners out there, what would it be?
Well, I think it's to keep in mind that people really are starved for human interaction more and more. And more than ever. And to put yourself out there, that's the other thing. You know, if you take the same route to work and you stop at the same Starbucks every day and you stand in the same place on the side of the soccer field and you walk down the corridor to the conference through the same hallway every single time, you're probably going to, tap out the opportunities to meet new people. So just like, farmers plant seeds in organic, organic soil is about the nutrients in the soil, and you have to keep finding new fresh soil. You want to do the same thing as a networker. And so you want to put yourself out there. You want to take the path least traveled. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you discover really a world of opportunity, a world of people out there who are interesting, engaging, influential. And, it always has been, and it always will be, that it's through the people you know that you build your business, you build your career, and you expand your life.
Well, wonderful visiting with you. David, if somebody needs to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
DTopus at topus.com, DTOPUS.
Okay. Well, perfect. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Jim?
A pleasure.
Jim, me too.
We appreciate the time, and until next week, for our listeners, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.